Welcome to the 2009 July Message of the Month, featuring the President, Founder, and Guiding Light of Light Within, David Hulse. This month's message was recorded during our July 4th gathering here in Dayton, Ohio. This is the Saturday morning message and is titled Crossroads, Our Spiritual Crisis. For more information, you can contact us at Light Within, 3195 Dayton Xenia Road, Suite 900-331, Dayton, Ohio, 45434, or call 937-912-9229. On the web, of course, at www.lightwithin.com. Be sure and stay tuned on the end of the CD, where we will feature a few minutes of the guest speaker, Gary Sigler, who will be our guest speaker at this year's Labor Day weekend retreat. The early bird specials for the Labor Day retreat end on July 20th, so call today and register. We now join David and friends in Dayton, Ohio, where the Saturday morning meeting, Crossroads, Our Spiritual Crisis, has just begun.
One thing I've learned at this point in my life is to take absolutely nothing for granted. To me, it's all about conscious living. I call it conscious living. I mean, down to the smallest detail. This is not just a day of tuning, but fine-tuning. To fine-tune your awareness, to be aware where you are at all times, to be conscious of everything you do, the message that goes from your brain to your hand to pick up a toothbrush. Take nothing for granted. You that are walking and thinking nothing about your legs and feet walking, with what I'm going through and my legs and feet, I ask you not to take for granted the moving of your legs and your feet. Acknowledge the good parts of your body. Not that part that's in pain. It's terrible that the body has to yell at us to get our attention through our sickness and disease and pain. How often do we just stop and think our heart, if it's a good heart and it's beating? Think our lungs, if our lungs are working and we're breathing. As time is winding up as we know it, and if you stop and think about something that's winding, that's way out here, it's much slower, isn't it? I was telling you last night that they're saying that time, which is no such thing as time, but there's a perception of how we experience space through perception. Time is a thing of perception. Trust me, if I had all of you at A and end up at B, every one of you could have a different experience with going the same distance. Some of you'd say, I never thought I'd get to B. Some of you said, I can't believe how fast I got to B. Because of your own experience and your perception of that experience from A to B in space. So Einstein really is the one in our contemporary modern times that actually gave us this idea of the time-space continuum with the addition of fourth dimensional experience of time. Often share with groups, because a lot of people don't understand that. They don't understand that everything is third dimensional. Everything you're seeing in this room has width, breadth, and height. It's 3D. We call it a 3D world. So how I explain fifth dimensional energy coming in, that's what's breaking through. And because of what's breaking through, there's breakdown. That's simple, but it's really a profound idea to grasp, is if anything's breaking down in your life, it's because something's breaking through. Nothing breaks down to break down. It only breaks down because something is breaking through. And you have to be at a crossroad at that point in which you have to decide, am I going to work with trying to fix what's breaking down, put all my energy and investment of my energy in trying to fix what's breaking down, or am I going to work with what's breaking through? And that was my dilemma in 2000 with the tuning forks and with energy work, is I was asked that question, will you work with breakdown or breakthrough? And the answer, Ruth, was so interesting because it didn't come out of the analyzation of my brain, but it came out of my body, And this yes came out of and left my brain stunned. How dare you get an answer that I've not analyzed? Who do you think you are? Oh, the brain is so good at intimidating us when that inherent intelligence arises, when that Christ consciousness begins to move in the form of inspiration, epiphanies, the brain is so intimidated because it's been in control of these bodies for so long. And it's not only have we downloaded the brain with our data from culture, society, and religions, and etc., but the brain has downloaded itself in the cellular structure. And we've become not the logos made flesh, but we've become the perceptions of dogma made flesh. We've become the perceptions of education and culture. And there lies the great dilemma that goes on in the warfares that goes on within our members of our body. I said as a young man, a very young man, and listened to fundamentalist Pentecostal teachings that I was raised in, and I heard about the abominations, and this was bad, and that was bad. And some of those things were about me, secretly inside. I was being told I'm an abomination. But you know what saved me? I'll tell you what saved me was the ability that I felt something different in my heart than what they were saying. I'm not saying it was easy, but I kept trying to stay tuned to my heart and not be sucked in to the dogma that was being downloaded into my brain. Are you with me? And there was the warfare. Did I trust my heart? Or was my heart deceiving me, as they said? And should I try to give my power to the dogma and the theology? There were times I felt to do that and attempted even to do that. Try to be politically correct, socially correct, humanly correct, as far as culture had defined me. But it was against the grain of my being. It was against the grain of how I'm wired, how I'm put together. But they kept saying, if you'll pray hard enough, you'll change. If you'll fast more, you'll change. If you'll read the good book, you'll change. If you get baptized a certain way, if you take communion a certain way, you'll be changed. I said, okay. But that change never came. Come. That change never came. I'm talking about in the core of the being of who I am. And because people ask me, have you done this for 47 years? 47 years is all I've done my whole life, is make a living and a life through ministry. And every time I've gotten up in those 47 years, I've gone to that same crossroad. Are you going to tell them what they want to hear, or are you going to be true to your heart? And when you're true to your heart, you are perceived as controversial. And I remain, in the eyes of many, a very controversial figure, because I try to trust the heart over the brain. Now, that struggle's gone on for a lot of years, but I think something wonderful's happening now. And I heard it last night, actually, come out of myself, that it was time for the marriage. Yes. No more excuses. It's time for the marriage of the brain and the heart. Did you know that the heart is formed in us before the brain, within the human fetus? Did you know that the heart has 500 times the electromagnetic energy than the brain? But because we've given so much of that power of the heart to the brain has become the central system to process information outside of ourselves. Outside of ourselves. Because when we're very, very young, we are not validated for our authenticity. We don't get the ice cream or the quarter because we have been true to ourselves. We get it because we did not embarrass our parents. Huh? We didn't cry and embarrass our parents. We didn't feel our feelings because we didn't embarrass anyone in the family, in the tribe. And that's why there's a part of us that's caught in the first chakra of the tribe. Don't buy into the illusion that you're an adult and that you've left all that behind you. This is why I'm very careful about leaving past. I don't have to go to past, but past has to come to me. I am the sum total of all of my experiences in this incarnation. And my empowerment lies in that ability to empower myself with everything and not regret one thing. That's what I'm working on the most, is to not judge anything that I've been through, whether I agree or disagree with it. And that's why I love these little meetings, when we come together, because I can share that. That's why I love the Labor Day retreat, because when you come to the Labor Day retreat, you kind of get the whole story, at least of my path, and many of you come because you share a similar path from where we've all come from, whether it's Pentecostal or Catholicism. But when we come from these very exclusive religions that were the church and the elect, the one, and everybody else was wrong, doesn't matter what form it is, it's the content that makes all the difference. And that's what I attempt. I attempt to recognize, and especially this year, I'm really trying to embrace all of that within the retreat. My experience in the Holy Spirit, my experience in the sons of God, my experience in the kingdom, my experience in universal reconciliationism, and my experience into and then you lose titles. And that's the best thing, is when you don't know what to call yourself anymore. I really don't know what to call it. You know, it's a combination of science and quantum physics and energy and vibration, and I don't even know. How could I title all those many things? I just am, and it just is. And that's the way that it works today. So the way I explain this time-space thing is very simple. Very simple. If I was going to meet Ruth here at in Dayton here at First and Main on the 12th floor, I've given her three bits of information. She could locate me. Pilots, all they need, that's why they can fly through storms and darkness and whatever, because if they have three bits of information, they know exactly where they are in space. But one thing is missing if I ask you to meet me at First and Main on the 12th floor. You don't know when to meet me. So we have to add one more bit of information, which is time to space, and we have a time space. Now we can get together. The sad thing that I find in my travels is how many people think that this is it. And how many people today, and this has been going on a few decades, but how many people today that you can recognize that feel like there's no more room for them in this dimension? This is the frustration of the human, is because they've bought into the illusion that everything they need is in this dimension that we live in. They keep trying to work it, recycle it, fix it, until we've become so tired and worn out. And that's what people tell me. I'm so worn out. I don't mean just, of course it's physical energy, but I'm talking about within the process itself, people are just tired of trying to seek, trying to find it, trying to get the right thing, the absolute. And this is good, because this reminds me of the similar experience that caterpillar must feel when it's transformed into a butterfly and it's still in the cocoon. The caterpillar may have enough room for the process. That's what space is for. Third dimensional space is for you to process. But when you process and have your change, metamorpho, Greek word metamorpho, change, and all of a sudden you've become a different species. And I keep trying to get people to see this thing. A caterpillar does not go into the cocoon to emerge as an enlightened caterpillar. Simple? Can't get more simple than that. But Homo sapien humans think they're going to enter into whatever process they're in and come out this enlightened Homo sapien human. Not going to work. Not going to work. But let me tell you what's between the caterpillar and the butterfly. Total breakdown and crises. No way to skip it. It's a part of the process of transformation. Begins with crises. It's the two laws of that are given to us of dynamics. I'm trying to think. What am I trying to think of? One, you cannot destroy energy. But secondly, you can change the pattern of energy. Thermodynamics is what I'm trying to think of. The two laws of thermodynamics. You cannot destroy energy, but you can change energy. By using vibration, you can change it into different patterns. But again, between changing a pattern to a pattern, there has to be the breakdown of the old pattern. Now stop and think about that at a deep level. Feel what I'm saying to you, because doesn't it make sense to you that if everything is everything else at some level, and this is the new spiritual kind of law today, is one, the idea of one, and really this is not New Age to come to this, it's a restoring of old alchemist thinking. When the ancient alchemist understood that whatever makes lead rearranged could make gold, because it's all made out of the same thing. If you stop and think that basically if we all reduced ourselves down to a quantum level, we'd all be made of electrons, neutrons, protons. If we broke them down, we'd be quarks and neutrinos, and we'd become all this quantum particles and then waves, and then pretty soon we just become little puffs of possibility. Just always saying, I'm here, what are you going to work with me? I mean, we run out of things when we run out of particles and waves, and then we get into possibility and potential. We get into a field of possibility, a teeming electromagnetic field of possibility that the brain for centuries and centuries and centuries in the Western culture especially and in Christendom has looked at it and said nothing. No reason to go there. There's nothing there to go to. Do you see it? No. Have you heard it? No. Have you tasted it? No. Five senses says no, 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 five times, and it's registered as a belief. The air between me and Sarah, they said, is empty space. Nothing there at all. Nothing between stars. Nothing between planets. And we know that is not true anymore. I sometimes play the NASA recordings of the great trek of the Explorer and whatever. I have about 5 million miles of their journey on CDs. And when you hear it, you will hear that between every planet and its moon is connected by sound. It sounds like Tibetan bowl sometimes. And it explains it. It's all on the CD and explains what this is, that it is all sonic sound and energy connecting everything out there with everything else. That there is no empty space. And all of a sudden, in the great shift of consciousness, nothing becomes everything else I'm looking for. You that are still searching and looking, guess where? It's in the field of possibility that is within every cell of your body. Your electron spins in it. Your electron spins in that space. And in that space is probability. That's what they call it, a cloud of probability. That's why DNA was not discovered until just a few decades ago, actually in the 50s. You know why? Because every time they looked at the nucleus, the human nucleus, all they saw was a covering, a veil, which was a cloud of probability covered what was behind it, just like the veil covered that Shekinah, which was in the most holy place. No one could go into that place because a veil. I'm telling you, that veil is the cloud of probability that is hiding the most holy place in every one of us, that holds the information and the blueprint to create a new light being. And it's interesting that the two gentlemen who studied this, and I won't go into all that history and all that, I know it's not important, but it's just interesting to me that when I read about Einstein, I read about Crick and Watson, and all these people who have done these things, which we terribly know little about, which is so sad. We know more about Isaiah and Jeremiah and Paul and Timothy more than we know about the people who's changed our lives in our time, which I find a little sad. Because it's always worship in retrospect, isn't it? It's always about what they did thousands of years ago. What about the people who have pierced into changing the world in the last 50 years, 100 years? You realize what has happened on this planet in the last 100 years is more than it ever happened in modern time up to that time for centuries? But the thing is, when you read all of this, this is the bottom line. When you read how they did this, they became playful and they became as a child with imagination. No wonder Einstein says imagination is greater than knowledge. Because when he was trying to find MC squared and all, and then the relativity, he went to a park in the night and imagined himself riding this great beam of light. And it was on that experience of imagining himself that he was enlightened with the law of relativity. The two gentlemen found DNA. You know what they were doing? Playing with Tinker Toys. And cut out cardboard. Playing on the floor. When they finally understood deoxyribonucleic acid, the double helix of DNA. Now, I don't put myself with them, but I'm going to use myself. Because when I came to Soul Energetics, the thing that was the key word that I said to the first person that I ever tuned, meet me and we'll play with the tuning forks. Not having the information or the knowledge downloaded in my brain, there was nothing else to do but allow myself to become a child and play in the great field of imagination. In the field of imagination. And from that, Soma Energetics was conceived and finally birthed. And I understood, unless you become as a child, you shall not enter the things of the kingdom of heaven. And I say to all of us today, do you play enough in your life? When is the last time that you actually played and allowed yourself to become the child that you are? In many of us, the child has never grown up. My goodness, Michael Jackson is a great example of that. I've seen it in every child star, that their childhood is taken away from them and stuffed deeply, and they get caught in it, trapped in their childhood. Everybody who's done that grows up to be the most irresponsible, immature adults that we have, and I'm not excluded from that. I'll be honest with you. I told you this weekend I had you here because I wanted to be honest and come from the very core of my heart. No playing games this weekend. But because I started ministering at 16, and you stop and think, when I look at 16-year-old kids and think what I did at 16, left home, pastoring by 19, never really had a graduation, never had a prom, never finished being the teenager that I was, that has left me in many areas rather immature, in many, many areas that I deal with in my adult life. And I'm saying all that to say to you that it hasn't gone anywhere. Don't let your brain tell you it grew up with you, because it didn't. It's still there, and we all need to go and retrieve that child in all of us and let it come out once in a while and play. And let it mature and let it grow. I don't know why I'm talking about that, but that's very important to me. I had a little quote from Einstein. I like Einstein. I think he's an interesting character. He said some phenomenal things for his time and had a great thing. This is simple, but he says, "We shall require a substantially new manner of thinking if mankind is to survive." My heart has always been more towards spiritual education. I've always been a teacher. I cannot speak without, in some way, teaching and instructing people. I've never been good at getting a little sermon together and preaching that sermon. I just have the passion to raise consciousness, to develop. When I first started this and received the baptism, started ministering, the first thing that I saw out of this Bible was Ephesians 4. And it talked about growing up in Him into the fullness of the stature. And I got these words, growing up. I never heard anybody talk about growing up in the church. It's always about getting saved and not going to hell, but never about development, about growing up. And it says, "No longer let us be as a child being tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine, but growing up in love." And I thought, that's the message I want, is the growing up. And boy, was I met with a hostile church, because the deacons didn't think they needed to grow up. The elders didn't think they needed to grow up. The minister sure didn't think he needed to grow up. And all the saved saints didn't think they needed to grow up. They were there waiting to fly off somewhere. And here I come with a message, there is more, and we need to grow, and we need to get it now. So that set a precedent for my ministry. All right, let me talk just a little bit about spiritual energy diagnosis for just a little bit this morning. I admit, I go to a lot of doctors and a lot of people. I have the insurance to do it, so I do it. I do it for several reasons. I do it because I want to learn, and I want to also plant seed. I've been able to share with a lot of doctors a lot of things that they went, oh, and one of the main things is fascinating is I walk into a doctor's office and there's a tuning fork sitting there. How many of you go to a doctor and there's a tuning fork? They are taught in medical school to have a tuning fork so they can check people's numbness in their feet and different places on the body. And what it is, Sarah, a 128 usually tuning fork. And when I can say to them, $12 million went into research into that tuning fork because it pops nitric oxide, their mouth opens. And they look at that tuning fork like I had no idea at all. And there is a new breed of medical physicians that are understanding if they don't move with the times, they're going to dry up. They know the system's going to fall. They're bracing themselves right now. My medical doctor is totally going into a new thing. I don't understand it, but it's a whole new thing because he understands. He sees the vision, and he's going into more of an alternative approach with people. So not wait until you're sick to come to him. And that's all he's known. But now he has restructured a thing in which you pay so much and you get this attention for preventive reasons before any sickness or disease. And I think this is a model. This is a model to come of those who will move into that. That's why you cannot exclude. I don't like it when people say, all doctors are a bunch of baloney. All this is wrong. There's no all of anything. There's no absolute in this third dimension. The wheat and the tares have grown together, and you have to discern. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I'm not real thrilled about people say, well, I was a Catholic and I can't stand Catholicism and I don't want nothing to do with that. You chose this script. You chose this experience. You chose to do that. Why would you spend energy regretting where you've been or ashamed of where you've been? That's your earth experience. That's your Akashic record in your soul. Value it. I wouldn't raise Catholics. I don't know much about it. I wouldn't be any good at all. Somebody would come to me and say, well, I was Catholic. But somebody come out of fundamentalist church, I'm ready for you. Been there, done that. I've never smoked cigarettes. I've never drank coffee. This is my good side list. Don't get to the other. It's a good side list. But the point is, I have no compassion. Like, get over it. Stop it. Well, that's the last thing somebody would want to understand, who's an addict of some kind. They don't need a slap on the wrist. They need somebody who says, oh, my God, I know what you're going through. I've been there. I understand it. This is what I did. Maybe I could offer you empowerment or support. That's where your value is. Your value lies within the experiences that you have filed within your personal Akashic records. Use them. They're not lead. Make them into gold. Make them into gold. The strongest parts of you have been your weakest points. Let the weak say they are strong. Trust me, it's not your strongest points that's your strength. It's your strongest points. It's a bunch of ego. You know, somebody comes all controlled and all this and they're that and they're whatever and I'm strong and I've got it and I'm enlightened and I've had it. Get away from me. I want somebody that has a little compassion, passion, understanding, and they have some experience of their life to bring to the table. What I'm saying to you, I go to doctors and I go to alternative and I go to all kinds of things, but it's my responsibility to come back to my space and process that information and offer it to the higher altar of my higher self. And that's sometimes hard when you have something wrong with you and you have a fear, because fear will knock you out consciously. Emotion knocks you out consciously. And if you're knocked out consciously, you will grab for whatever is dangled before you. And that's where we get on the slippery slopes of the pharmaceutical drugs and whatever. And I'm not saying all pharmaceuticals are wrong for a certain period of time and whatever either. I'm sorry. I'm not throwing anything out. I'm just not going there. I'm not going to get into that mindset that everything's wrong about everything. I saw medical drugs keep my mother alive, probably, or the medical profession to keep my mother alive for an extra 10 years that she would not have been alive, or at least alive with legs and feet. So I cannot deny. And I don't think the alternative people could have done that. I really doubt seriously. And we did that too. So some things are so rooted in us and whatever that we need both of these schools to draw from. But doesn't matter which one you go to, it's still your responsibility where you want to put your power. You're responsible for where you want to invest. You're the investor. Everything you do is an investment of your life stream, of your power, of your vital life force. We need to become in this time, and I say we, meaning those who are in the process of transformation going through the crises now, going through the breakdown, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, in many ways, and physically. It's not just a physical thing. There's a lot of things mentally and emotionally, psychologically that's going on. Depressions, sleep change, memory change. All kinds of things are going on with people who feel they have found the path, so to speak. Finding the path does not automatically just give you your inheritance to the kingdom. So we have to become people who can do self-diagnosis. Somebody said, we all have the doctor within. It's not just a doctor out there, but the doctor is within. There's that part of us, and we need to look at that. So I want to talk about symptomology of spiritual crises. And the reason is because it can become identical with psychological and physical crises. You can't separate spirit anymore. That's the paradigm it's over, and I really offend a lot of people who's in the body-mind-spirit idea. And I like the body-mind-spirit idea. Remember, I don't get rid of past things. I bring them with me. But the body-mind-spirit idea is still on the edge, even though it's evolutionary, of the edge of the old age of reductionism. It still places things in their box. It's labeling energy. Spirit is energy at higher vibrations. Soul is energy at more intermediate vibration. And the physical world is the most dense of the vibrations, much as the temperature is different with steam. When it's lowered, it becomes water. When it becomes lowered, it becomes ice, because the molecules bind together more and more. There's more space in steam than there are in water. Therefore, it binds to become water, and then it becomes ice. So I've tried to get people to talk more the word energy. And speaking of the whole system, we're an energetic system. And the differences in our energy is only due to vibration or frequencies. And we know we can lower frequencies or we can raise frequencies, just as you can raise temperatures and you can lower temperatures. So by having access to the vibrational spectrum, you can reform, rechange, restructure. And there lies the process of transformation. But again, the first thing that happens at the molecular level is that all the molecules go into an unstable position. No doubt about it. If you looked at it through an electron microscope and watched this, you would see what makes a hydrogen atom would go totally unstable when it's ready to become a hydrogen atom or a lithium atom. So it can't just jump from here to there. You know, that's the old story of the children of Israel. Man, get me out of Egypt and get me into the land. But nobody told them what was between. They had no idea. They had to be processed. So they went through their 40 years of their own crises. Well, if it's happening at the molecular level, what's happening at the cellular level? Same thing. As above, so below. You can't change the universal law. You can't change the universal law of how this thing works. There's no way to really escape it. And you can have all the positive thinking you want to. You can work the secret. You can do everything that you think that gives you what you think is a shortcut, but there is no shortcuts to the process. The process is what it is. You will eventually go to the cross. And you want to go to the cross. You want to go to the cross because the cross is an axis. Why would you want to bypass the message of the cross? I'm not talking dogma here. I'm not talking about suffering and Jesus. I'm talking about the cross. The cross itself represents an axis of being able to access vertically the multidimensional of consciousness. The Star of David has an axis. Most every symbol of everything, there is an axis point in which a different decision for a different outcome can be made. And I had something here I wanted to share with you. Did you put that over there? I don't think I'll use that right now. I think I had something here. In 1957, Princeton University physicist Hugh Ebert III took us a step further by devising the theory that described how the focus of our own awareness creates reality. Moments. He calls them moments. It becomes possible in a moment to jump from one reality to another reality by creating a quantum bridge between the already existing possibilities. And these points, our moments, are called choice points. Choice points. There are, and they're attoseconds, not nanoseconds. Now it's atto, A-T-T-O, attoseconds. Yeah, in the twinkling of an eye, an attosecond. The point is there is these mystical moments in which time collapses and there is a new possibility and a new choice. Now, again, the ego part borrows that truth and says, well, we can just do that when and be in control of it. No, you have to be sensitive to be in alignment to those experiences are moments in which that choice can be made. It's all musical. It's all timing. It's all about the notes and the melody all coming together. It's not about all this random spirituality that's being taught, that all I have to do is just sit down and change my mind and change my body. It won't work that way. You can change your mind, be diagnosed with cancer, and die with cancer, and still have all of that positive in some point. The point of the experience of getting it to the cellular level in which there is a change within the cells and the makeup and the pattern is to be able to find these moments in time in which a choice can be registered through and to the cellular level. Now, how we know those points? Probably the only way I could in any way give you a hint toward it would be those times that you're not thinking about much anything spiritual, and all of a sudden a spiritual aha comes along. And you go, where did that come from? Man, I get it. What an epiphany. What a penetration. In those moments that you have those, take the advantage of making a new choice. Quantum bridging. And Sarah, that kind of excited me because I do believe tuning forks is a form of vibrational bridging. That's one thing we try to do, is we try to use the intervals of tuning forks to bridge. That frequency between the two becomes a bridge. I can't see it. We can't see that when we see the two tuning forks, but we can't see the interval because it's a different level that is beyond my five senses to see the interval. But I know it's there. I know between 396 and 417 is 21 hertz of those two tuning forks. I can't see 21 hertz. I can see the 396. I can hold it up to you. I can hold up the 417. But when I tap them together, I bring forth something that cannot be seen by the five senses. That becomes an opportunity for something to change, something to cross over, something to move into a different position. Just let me talk just a few more minutes on symptoms of spiritual crises. Just three things. Spiritual crises begins with an awareness of an absence of meaning and purpose that cannot be remedied by shuffling, I like this, the eternal components of one's life around. I think that is so good. What does that mean? Maybe if I get a new car, maybe if I get a new partner, maybe if I get some new clothes, maybe if I buy a new house, maybe I move to a different state. See, we're shuffling around the same stuff, going from house to house, car to car, partner to partner, etc., and thinking by moving and shuffling things around, that's going to bring enlightenment and happiness into my life. Now, we're all old enough here and have enough experience under our belt to know that ain't the answer. When you go through a spiritual transformation, you do feel an absence of the meaning you thought it was going to be. I've been using the example a lot, even in the tuning forks, of trying to tell people there's a great shift right now, an opportunity for people to change occupations. I mean, this is really tremendous. I hate to say it. I feel the compassion for people that's losing their jobs. But really, these are the first fruits of the harvest that are being shaken out of the nest into the point that they're going to have to go deeper in themselves to reinvent how to make a living in this society. And I'll tell you what, some pretty wonderful things are happening. I wish CNN and all of them would report it. The media does not report the wonderful things enough of what people are coming with of ways to make money. Now, there was a report recently of someone who's doing tremendously. I forgot, it was some simple thing. I don't know what it was. It was so simple, but it was profound. She invented it, and it's going worldwide, millions of dollars. And I thought, that's cool. That's the new cool. Sorry, I don't want to say that anymore since you said what you did. Forget that. That's really great. That's really great to me. I thought, if she can do it, how many more people? It may take them a while to get over their experience of feeling abandoned and angry at the government and angry at the corporation and the CEO. I mean, if people do that, don't get stuck there. That's the key. Don't get stuck there. But if you move on and become tremendously creative, this causes one to feel a deeper longing. There is a tremendous hunger and thirst, a longing, not to find to be satisfied by just experiencing, say, a raise, promotion, marriage, new relationship. Ordinary solutions hold no attraction. That's the key. You have to come to a place where it's just like, oh, well, I guess a car is a car. As long as it runs, it gets me from A to B. I don't care what it is. Oh, well, a house is a house. I'm fine where I am. I don't really need anything bigger. I don't need that extra bathroom, house with the bathroom like I thought. I'm making it. I'm fine. I'm really tired of thinking that moving to a house is going to make me any happier, so I'm decided to be content in whatever state in which I'm found. When that kind of happens and you start detaching yourself from all of the, how to put this? I thought it was good. Ordinary solutions. Then you become a candidate to move into a different arena. Those who are in spiritual crisis have a feeling that something is trying to wake up inside them. They don't even know what it is, but they feel the awakening. Now, what I was going to say a while ago that I'm telling people is because of all these shifts of occupations, you know, I have to draw from my experience. But I love telling the story of how when Jesus, when the Christ was beginning and surrounding himself with the 12, which is so powerful. Oh my God, that's so much powerful, because it takes 12 sperm coming together to get the one sperm to the egg. Do you know that? The one sperm would not make it into the egg if it was not the pattern of 12 other sperm to let it get through. And I'm telling you, he carried the seed. The sperma, the word, was in him, and he surrounded himself to the 12 to get to the egg of each and every one of us to conceive itself until Christ lives in you, the hope of glory. But my point is, when he went to Peter, now here's Peter, let's just kind of ad lib here a little bit. Here's Peter, he's a fisherman. Let's be a fisherman all of his life. Let's say his dad was a fisherman. He's going to be a fisherman. His son's going to be a fisherman. This is what the family business does, is fishing. And that Christ consciousness comes along and says, all right, this isn't what you're born for, Peter. This is not your sole purpose. I don't care how great, successful you are. It's time now for you to move into your sole purpose. Let down your nets. Put them down. Follow me. Got a new vocation for you. Goes down to the accountants. The accountant has his pen, paper, writing his numbers. Going to do it the rest of his life. Put down your pen, follow me. That's what I see that's happening. The Christ consciousness is piercing the collective consciousness and saying, put down what you're doing because it's time for you to align yourself to why you incarnated. And there's going to be a lot of shifts of jobs, a lot of shifts in relationships, a lot of shifts in many areas as people begin to align and tune themselves to their soul purpose. Two, strange new fears. Strange new fears, not ordinary as abandonment, aging. Rather, they make a person feel as if he or she is losing touch with a sense of self or identity. Who am I? If I've not been asked that question 1,000 times or more in all these years, people want to know who I am, what am I here for, and what should I do with it? That's the great question of the soul. Purpose. Alignment. Who am I, really? The greatest thing that a person can find within a lifetime is identity. For identity itself is the truth. The truth is not in a religion. There's no church that has the truth. There's no religion that has the truth. Truth is what I am. I am the truth. I don't have the truth. I am the truth. I may say some things that could be true to you and not true to another. True, again, is a relative thing in time and space. It's only based on the perception of your belief system. If somebody says something or you read something, you go, oh, I like that. I think I believe it. That's true now to me. So I'm going to store it in my true file. And every time somebody says it, I'm going to go, amen. I like that. That's what I believe. And we just go around validating each other's truths, little truisms, and it may not be the truth at all. And pretty soon we can build a whole church and a denomination out of it, because all these people who agree with me, we're going to start a group. And we're going to say everybody else is wrong and we're right. We're the church of the truth. I'm coming to close. Need three, to experience devotion to something. This is a careful place for the people that I've walked through for the last 33 centuries. It's not centuries. Decades.
You might be right.
Could be. Spiritual slip. Not a Freudian slip, a spiritual slip. But in the last decades that I've been in this, since the late 60s and early 70s, of course, people, where a lot of people has landed, is I am God, and there's nothing else. And people have nothing bigger than themselves in which to give devotion to. This warns us of that. This says this is not healthy. It is not at all how we're really wired in the soul. I'm not talking about the brain. The brain is too. But the soul also has a wire for devotion to something greater than oneself. And of course, you know, we've always taught in Christianity Jesus and God are one. But it's even him, he says, but my Father is greater. Make them one even as we are one, but my Father is greater. So it doesn't mean being one doesn't mean that we don't need something greater than ourselves. And you know what? You let anybody get in a certain situation, and the first thing coming out of their mouth is, oh my God, oh Jesus. Does out of mine. I don't care where I take my brain today and tell you I believe. If something happens, I'm going to call on something. I even go out there and hug that tree. Put my back to that tree.
I got to get something greater or beyond that which I am, an extension of myself in something else in which I connect with devotion. If it's Mother Earth, whatever it is, we all need something. Now, a lot of us are comfortable with the Christ idea. We're comfortable with the Jesus idea outside the box of dogma and theology. That's fine. Some are more attracted to the idea of Buddha or Krishna or whatever. Really, I think we should not get caught in the symbolism of how we name sometimes the very same thing. So be careful of those egoic trappings. The many psychological texts available today that describe human needs rarely mention our fundamental need for devotion. Yet the biological and energetically need to be in contact with Source that transcends human limitations and our turmoil. So again, I'm just reminding us, it's okay. We don't have to hide our light under a bushel, but we do need to praise, pray, connect to something. And let us be comfortable with whatever form we choose. And let's not try to put it on somebody else. That's the key. Because I've chose a certain form that I'm comfortable with does not mean that I have to convert anybody to my form. It says devotion commits a part of our consciousness to our unconscious higher eternal self, which in return connects us directly to divine presence. In other words, we do need a mediator. When Christ is saying, I'm the mediator between man and God. We all need that something that bridges, and there the connection is on the bridge of consciousness. It's very important. As fifth dimension energy begins to come in, we begin to feel it. And I'm going to quote this from last night and then close. So I want to do this every meeting. I want to give you this quote because I think it's so good. It was sent to me from a book called Frequency by Penny Pierce. And I quote, as the spiritual frequency penetrates the physical world, which includes both the planet and our own body, it also saturates your mind and emotions. Your body revs to adapt the higher vibration, which initially disturbs your comfort levels. High frequency energy activates both positive as well as negative emotions, which makes you more aware of them. Your heart may pound or skip a beat. And that's exactly what I went to a doctor for last week, because my heart had palpitations and was skipping beats. Because the old egoic self that I'm so familiar with has a lot of anxiety about letting go. There's things about it I don't care for that much, that I embraced only. But I'm telling you what, it's familiar to me. The pain of it is familiar with me. The needs in it is familiar to me. I've lived with it for 63 years. And they hang around like an old friend. Always there. I can always know when I wake up in the morning. That old self will be there and all of its stuff. And then I'm going to go to a meeting and talk about someday. Pushing it into the future, but not now. Well, guess what? Here's what I believe for what it's worth to you. And this is what I know for me, but I only believe for you. I know through my own experience of cellular memory that I made a contract in this last lifetime for the third dimension that I was to be pushed and activated to fulfill my purpose in this lifetime. And I made a contract that it's okay to bring into my life whatever it takes to make this a now experience of the frequency penetrating my physical. No more putting it off through free will. See, I had to use free will to make the contract. Do you understand? This is what you and I refer to as predestination. Predestination is not some God putting something on you in spite of you. It's fulfillment of your own contract you made to make sure in this dimension that you arrived at the 9 vibration of total completion in a lifetime. And that's why things are more deeper, more severe, and whatever in all of our lives, because we have been put in a place in spite of ourselves. In other words, our higher self is working its thing in spite of our lower self. Our lower self is kicking and screaming, saying, not yet, not now, not now, not now. Can't take it now. I have too much on me right now. A little later. Got too much going on with the family. Got this going on with the grandkids. Got this going on. Whatever. I need to do this. I'm sorry. Too late. It's going to come in wherever you are and whatever you're doing, and whatever's going on in your world does not even matter to it. As the spiritual frequency penetrates, do you feel the penetration? Do you feel it coming into your aura, into your energy bodies, and shaking everything in your physical life? Now, we are totally and must go through. It's a little easier sometimes to go through it with you. And I hope you do with me and with each other. Providing a space, I don't mean just a space, but a space in consciousness to not judge one another, to support one another, to let the process take its natural unfoldment to its full fruition. Hello and welcome to this month's message of the month. We are just completing our 4th of July weekend. It was a great weekend, and I hope you've enjoyed this message of the month. I would like for you to look at our summer 2009 itinerary dates. For the spiritual lecture that we do, we'll be in Dallas, Texas, August the 8th and 9th at the Holiday Inn Express, and that is in the suburb of Addison in North Dallas, Texas. That is Saturday and Sunday only. So we want to invite you to be there. I feel that this will be a very special gathering in Dallas, Texas. Also back in Dayton, Ohio, on August 22nd and 23rd, we'll be offering you 3 different workshops in that weekend. And this is a very powerful weekend. First, we offer a DNA activation workshop. Then we also offer a planetary workshop using the planet tuners on the vertebrae. And thirdly, we'll be offering a body tuner workshop. So we'll be using our body tuners, the solfeggio body tuners, on meridians and on acupressure points of the body. Also, we'll be working with the rings of the elements, fire, earth, and water, and all of the different elements of the body, and how we can activate and actually influence, possibly, hormones and other things throughout the body. This is based on the work of Dr. Norm Shealy. And also, the 18th Annual Labor Day Weekend Retreat is coming up, which will be held at the Bergamo Center right here in Dayton, Ohio, where there's going to be wonderful practitioners, wonderful speakers, small groups, fire ceremonies, meditation, and also this year I want to introduce a very special speaker that we have invited to come in.
His name is Gary Sigler, and I believe Gary Sigler now resides in Georgia. And Gary is someone I have not personally met that I know of, but I've heard of for many years. Gary and I both share somewhat of a same path that has brought us to the point in which we have arrived of coming from a place of love and a place of acceptance, a place of inclusivism, in which we realize that the divine does not see the things of the flesh. This is for us to work out for our higher good. This is for us to develop. This is our part of the salvation plan. The divine has taken care of the spiritual aspect and has been successful. We hear that in the words, "It is finished." That means it is finished within the spirit realm. And the divine beholds itself in its perfect state in the higher spiritual realms. In the lower realms of the physical, we all have genetic, ancestral issues that we have to work out. We all have issues of the way we've been shaped by religions of man and culture and society. All of these very low physical carnal issues are the issues that is our part to work with. So we're rather in partnership in the sense of bringing full redemption and salvation to the soul and the body. So I really want to invite you, and for you to invite others, to come to this retreat in Bergamo on September the 4th through the 7th. One other thing real quickly that I want to share with you, and many of you that's been listening to my tapes and CDs for some years have heard the term irrevocable choice. I received this at the time we had a speaker in Barbara Marks Hubbard somewhere in the early 90s. And at that time when that was spoken, it registered and resonated within me that there would be a point within the state of free will and grace that an irrevocable choice would be made by the individual mind. And what this means to me is that we're coming to a time to set a level of consciousness that we would attain within the ending of this world age that we're coming to. I've heard that this will be registered somewhere and sometime within the year 2010. Of course, I wanted to know the exact time and the day and the place and everything, but it said to me, "No man knows the hour nor the day nor the time. For these things are not events, but these things are processes." So I cannot tell you when, but in 2010, we'll begin to set us at the level of consciousness that we will move to at this time, and we know there are many times, in the fullness of time shall I gather, it says in Ephesians, the first chapter. So not in one time, everybody doesn't have one time, but you have times in which you can attain, and if you don't attain the fullness of your consciousness at one time, then you can in another time. But this is one time or one age or eon that is ending. Therefore, we are beginning to set the level of consciousness in which we will have attained to. Of course, we're looking for those who are the light workers, we call them, but also they're called the first fruits, and they're called the elect, and they're called many different names. But these are the first ones who come to the level of consciousness that will hold the energy of the next age or eon that's coming in. And there has to be enough to hold that. We call that critical mass. And this has been our call, is to the light worker, to come forth, and we're calling now through this Labor Day retreat for as many that can to come and gather together, and let us come together as a corporate expression of the living presence of Christ in the earth.
I now want to introduce to you, for just about 10 minutes or so, the speaking of Gary Sigler. Again, I felt to call him and felt very good about his spirit. And the thing that is most important to us in this retreat is not how someone does or what they believe or how they say it. That's not where we come from. We come from a point in which is love without judgment. And because I feel this in this man's ministry, I felt that he really is living and practicing this whole idea of inclusivism, of being inclusive rather than exclusive. So we certainly have opened our hearts for him, and we know that we're going to produce something together, these two ministries and the other ministries that are represented there, that is going to bring us all to a different place on our journey. So at this time, I'd like to introduce to you Gary Sigler as he is speaking live somewhere. We just want to share a little bit of that message to you now. Bless you and thank you for your love and your support to this ministry and your faithfulness. Let us hear from you. And we love to hear about how that you're doing and how that the CDs are being a part of your life and affecting you. So bless you is always my prayer.
You know, it's a wonderful thing when the veils begin to be lifted. I remember there's a scripture in the Old Testament that talks about the veils that have been cast over all nations will one day be removed. And I believe this is the day. I shouldn't even say I believe, because it's happening. This is the day that the veil that's been cast over all nations is beginning to be lifted. And the veil is really only in one place, or over one place, and that's our minds. We talk a lot about two minds. We talk about the natural mind and we talk about the spiritual mind. Yet in reality, there's only one mind.
Amen.
It's how we use the mind that determines whether or not it's a natural mind or a spiritual mind. Science has, in these later years, science and quantum physics has proven beyond doubt the power that's in the mind. In fact, we can tell by our own experiences how powerful the mind is. But you can begin to think about certain things, maybe something that's happened to you a few years ago. And there's enough power in the thought of something that happened 20 years ago that can bring all the emotions and all the experiences and all the pain and all the hurt right back into the present moment.
Amen.
Now, that's what we call operating out of the natural mind. But yet, like I say, there's only one mind, but it's how we are using that mind that determines whether or not it's natural or spiritual. So what's happening in these days is God is removing the veil from our eyes and restoring our soul and giving us back our true identity.
Amen.
Do you know that's the only thing we've ever lost? And that's our identity. And I've been doing some meditation and some sharing on the weapons of warfare that Paul talks about in the book of Ephesians chapter 6, of putting on the armor of God. I hadn't even looked at that for years, but for some reason a while back I thought, you know what, there has to be more to that than what we've seen before. So I began to really go before the Lord and really meditate on what was Paul trying to say, or perhaps even Paul didn't really even have the full extent of what he was saying there. But that's the great thing about Scripture, because there's some things that are written in the Scriptures that even the writers themselves didn't realize the depth that was in what they were writing and saying. But anyway, Paul said that if we put on this armor, that we'll be able to withstand against the evil day. And I used to, whenever I'd hear this term evil day, I'd always think about a day that was sometime coming, perhaps when the Antichrist appears on the scene, or, you know, when we go through this so-called Great Tribulation. But I discovered that the evil day is simply whatever day that we're in, that we're operating out of this carnal mind. Again, operating wrongfully out of the mind. And appearing or looking at ourselves as though we're carnal human beings. Well, and one of the first, not one of the first things, but the first thing that Paul told us in this armor that we're to put on is to have our loins girt about with truth. And I'll tell you what, the order of the scriptures and the way that they're written is such a divine order. I don't think anything is by accident the way it's worded and the way it's placed in the scriptures. And so there was a reason for him saying that the first piece of armor we need to put on is what? The loins girt about with truth. And then we're to put on the breastplate of righteousness, and we're to put on the shoes of the gospel of peace, and we'll put on the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit. But why did he say the very first thing we have to know or to have put on is our loins girt about with truth? So when I got to really meditating on that and realized there must be a purpose for him saying that, I began to realize that the only way that you can fully understand the armor of God, in fact, the only way you can fully understand the mysteries of the gospel, the only way you can fully understand your purpose on the earth, is to first have your loins girt about with truth. And then I got to thinking about the loins, and the loins really represent reproduction.
Yes.
And the very first thing that Adam and Eve were told was to what? Reproduce and replenish the earth. Now, when they were told that, they had not yet partaken of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So I don't believe that God was telling them that they needed to physically reproduce on this earth. I don't believe that was the message at all. But the message was to replenish the earth. Well, then I got to thinking about, to have our loins girt about with truth, we have to know the truth.
Yes.
Because even Jesus said, you know, knowing the truth is what will set you free. And so I began to really meditate, well, what is truth? Because every Christian, just about that you know, every denomination, every group would say they have the truth. But my question is, God, the only way that I can have my loins girt about with truth, I have to know the truth. So what is the truth? And then I was reminded of what Pilate asked Jesus. He said, what is the truth? And Jesus said an amazing thing. I am the truth. So you don't have to look anywhere else. If you want to know the truth, just look at me. You might look at my life, what I've done up to this point, see how I, you know, how I walked, how I did only that which I seen my Father do. And so I know that I am a son of God. I know where I came from. I know who my Father is. So if you really want to know the truth, you have to realize I am the truth. And that hit me so deeply, because at that point I began to realize the only way that I can know truth is I have to become the truth, as he did. Mm-hmm. And I can't become that by being a good Baptist, or a good Lutheran, or a good Pentecostal, or a good Catholic. There's no way that I can learn how to become the truth. I have to have a revelation and an unveiling of the truth that is already deposited within me. Boy, when we begin to see the truth as it really is, then we never again have to ask anybody what's the truth. I have people ask me that still all the time. Well, what do you think about this? What is the truth? And I'm reminded of what Joel Goldsmith and William Walter Lanyon, they used to always say, lean not to the arm of flesh. Which means if you really want an answer, don't go to the arm of flesh. Don't go to a man to get your answer. But yet at the same time, a lot of times, I have received my answers from men, but not by going to ask questions and try to get opinions. Many times as you're listening to a speaker, you'll hear truth and you'll receive truth. But you know what? That truth is not coming from a man. That truth is coming from the Spirit of God that's within each of us. So we cannot find truth through intellectual studies. We can only find truth as it is unveiled within our own consciousness.
Yeah.